50 years ago today, a young Catholic politician who'd won the presidency against the odds swore his oath of office and then took the podium to deliver his inaugural address.
The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
John F. Kennedy was determined to deliver a speech that would be remembered for generations. And he did. His speech lasted less than 14 minutes. It was one of the shortest in the nation's history, but it struck a chord with Americans and somehow still does today. Joining us now is Thurston Clark, who's dedicated years to studying JFK's inaugural address and its impact. His new book is called Ask Not, The Inauguration of John F. Kennedy and the Speech That Changed America. Thurston Clark joins us from Washington, D.C. Good morning.
Good morning.
First, let's talk about the writing of the speech itself, which has gone down in history to a certain extent. One of the things that you outline in your book are the things that weren't written on paper when JFK took the podium, the things that he changed on the spur of the moment.
Well, yes. At the last minute, he made 32 changes to the reading copy of the speech. This was before presidents had any other aids like teleprompters, and he had a loose-leaf book. The speech was printed, typed in a large type. He didn't want to mark it up because he thought it was an important historical document, which it was. As he went along, he made some changes, some of them quite significant. The line that we just heard, the ask not line, that is written as, and so my fellow Americans, ask not what your country will do for you, ask what you can do for your country. He thought it would be much stronger with the substituting can so that both of parts of the sentence had can, and I think it is. And some of the early press reports had the speech wrong because they had the press handout instead of the speech that he'd delivered. Another place he talked about, the text talked about a cold and bitter peace. Well, Kennedy saw this as a speech, as an invitation to negotiation with the Soviet Union, and he didn't want to have anything echoing kind of Cold War. So he changed cold and bitter peace to hard and bitter peace. And throughout, there were other kind of editorial changes. All of them made the speech better. They made it tighter. They made it more moving. It was an incredible performance.
How much of a challenge, Thurston Clark, is it to analyze this speech 50 years on, given that there are two lenses here? One, the moment that was ending. JFK was the first president born in the 20th century, I believe, and was a generation torch was being passed. And also the lens of the assassination. Is the power of this speech a product of timing or really of rhetoric?
No, it's a product of rhetoric. The speech was instantly recognized as a great speech. It was praised on the left and the right by all of the newspaper editorial writers. There were no criticism of this speech. It was instantly recognized as a great speech. And 50 years later, it still is. It was chosen as one of the top 100, number two of the top 100 speeches of the 20th century by a group of historians 10 years ago. At the time, of course, as you point out, this was an incredible transition in American history. We had the oldest man to serve in the presidency, the youngest man ever elected taking office. But we also had a time that would turn to be quite different. We had kind of the end of the news magazines, Life and Look, as being where America got their images and their photographs. And instead, we were moving into television. It was almost like that moment in The Wizard of Oz, where we go from black and white to color. The inauguration was like that. Suddenly, we went from black and white, from the Eisenhower years, from the gray flannel-suited men to color, to Jackie in this fawn outfit with a little bit of mink, sitting next to all of these elderly ladies bundled up like big bears in mink coats. It was a stunning moment.
And maybe it's because of the transition on and forward. You say in your book that this speech wouldn't work today, that he wouldn't be able to give this and have it resonate the way that it did 50 years ago.
Well, I think we have a different kind of appreciation. I think that part of the thing that made this speech great was that the audience and the American people were hungering to hear these words. They were aching for them. Remember that it was just 3 years after the Soviets had beaten us into space with Sputnik. Americans were very worried at the time. We were worried that we were falling behind. We were worried that we were going to lose the Cold War. This was a speech given at what people considered to be a very perilous moment. Now, fast forward to the present, We had an inaugural speech from Barack Obama, which was frankly not one, going to be remembered as one of the great inaugural speeches. It was fine. It was okay. But people, you can't remember any lines. There were no grace notes. And I think that was on purpose. I think he took his foot off the rhetorical accelerator because he'd been criticized for it.
Let's talk a little bit about this transition moment again. You know, the way you describe the Cold War and the events leading up to Sputnik, and also the events following the Second World War, where so much investment was made in the American workforce, the GI Bill, these kinds of things. You know, there was a real turning point. Americans turned from expecting from government to, hey, we have to do something here. How did Kennedy seize that moment of passivity and turn it into one of action on the part of Americans?
Well, the first, you have to remember, you've made a good point. We have to remember that the government and the country was bound up more with the government then. The government had ended the Depression, had won World War II. We had the Marshall Plan, the GI Bill. The government had sent millions of GIs to college. And then you had built the interstate highway system. So Kennedy, the government already had, there was this the sense that people trusted their government at the time. And Kennedy built on this real unease in the country, the feeling that there was no national purpose anymore, that we'd lost our way. You know, I point out in the book that the year before, there had been a conference on the national purpose organized by Eisenhower. There was a special series of articles in Look magazine about the national purpose, the whole idea being that we'd lost our way, that we had no purpose. John Steinbeck famously wrote an essay at the time in which he talked about a, quote, vacancy in the national soul. Well, Kennedy's speech, and Kennedy felt that his job was to give people purpose, to rekindle the dedication and the sacrifice of the World War II generation. This speech is very much connected and speaking to the men who had fought and lost their friends in World War II. That's why you have lines such as, the graves of young Americans who answered the call to service around the globe. Well, of course, Kennedy's brother was one of those Americans, and his brother-in-law, and two men on his PT-109 crew. So Kennedy spoke to this restlessness in the World War II generation in this speech.
And he was so serious about making sure that his speech was the star of the day that he requested Robert Frost, who was reading a poem at his inauguration, read an old poem and not a new one. Frost tried to read a new one anyway, but it didn't work out. Thurston Clark is author of the book Ask Not, The Inauguration of John F. Kennedy and the Speech That Thanked America. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
All this will not be finished in the first 100 days, nor will it be finished in the first 1,000 days, nor in the life of this administration, nor even perhaps in our lifetime on this planet. But let us begin.
JFK 50 years ago. It's been more than 100 days of the Obama administration. Anticipating the State of the Union address, we have a request for you. John Kinghorn opened his refrigerator and showed us what the state of his union was. Open yours and show us the state of your refrigerator as a symbol of how you're doing right now. You can go to thetakeaway.org and get instructions on how to take home the iPhone app and actually use it to show the world the state of your union. I'm John Huckenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.